This is made for personal use, listening, to get an impression, idea, of content of this book. Here then is Google translated from German language, book, The Afterlife and the Spiritual World, of Kim Manjan. About the author. Kim Manjan has known all about her media skills since she was a child and is known for her appearances on TV. She regularly organizes seminars on topics related to human personality development, especially in the Zurich and Mannheim area. Her topics include the correct handling of one's own ego, setting personal boundaries and the inner child. For more information, visit www.kimandjan.ch. This book is dedicated to my children, as they always help me understand the miracle of life. Foreword. Even as a teenager I always said, one day I'll write a book. However, I said it more as a joke when something unusual happened in my life. Strangely enough, I still had the feeling now and then that it could really happen. Back then I had no idea what life would have in store for me, and that was a good thing. A lot has come together since then, and it seems to be time to record everything that has happened to me. In this second book I have tried to describe the most important things about the spiritual world and contact with the afterlife in a simple and understandable way. I hope that I have succeeded in giving you many interesting insights and entertaining moments. It would be a great pleasure for me. And perhaps I can also offer you some comfort with my words if you are currently grieving for a loved one. Death is just a door that we all go through at some point, and there is actually no real reason to be afraid of it. Because without death, this wonderful life would not exist. With deep affection, yours. Kim Manjan. Introduction. While I was writing this book, I repeatedly asked people around me to read passages from it. It was important to me to find out whether what I had written was easy to understand or whether I had to change one thing or another. After my mother-in-law had read a large part, she said, "I really like it and I understand what you write. But I still have one question, how do you know all this about death and the afterlife? I mean, you lead a pretty normal life, not much different to me. And yet I have no clue about any of these things." I realized that her question was actually justified. Since it was completely normal for me, I had never had to ask myself this question. The fact that there is an afterlife was always a given for me. The question of why had therefore never occurred to me. I thought about it for a while and quickly realized the reason for this. Ever since I came into this world as a human, actually, since I was growing in my mother's womb, I have been able to glimpse through the door to the spiritual world. In fact, I believe that it was always open. And that is the simple explanation for the fact that I already had this comprehensive knowledge about life after death as a child. That is why there was no separation between my spiritual existence and my physical existence, as is normally the case. I did not have to laboriously remember everything and dig out this knowledge of the spiritual world, like most people do, but was able to draw on it from the very beginning and use it more or less consciously. That is why I also perceive my spiritual helper very clearly. We were closely connected from the very beginning. Even if every human being has such spiritual support in the form of a helper at their side, it is not a given that the connection to each other works as well as it does with me. Unfortunately, many do not even know that they have this spiritual helper. Perhaps the book will help some of you to access this area again. In any case, it would be an honor for me to have contributed to this. 1. My path to mediumship. I have often asked myself why God gave me such a gift. I probably shouted here too loudly when the distribution of perceptual abilities in heaven before my birth was discussed. I should perhaps have listened to God a little better. When it came to the distribution of patience or slowness, I was probably on the toilet in heaven. And that's how my life here as a citizen of Earth began. I was in such a hurry that my mother didn't even make it to the front door after the contractions had started. My head was already getting some air, and so I was born 2 weeks early. The amniotic sac was on my head like a little hat. This speed caused all kinds of moments of horror in my family again and again after my birth. A sentence that was often heard when I was suddenly not found again, and that happened frequently, was the following: "She was just there. I must have chosen my guardian angel based on speed, otherwise I can't explain his performance." I often found myself in life-threatening situations, and each time, help came around the corner at the crucial moment, as if on cue. There really would have been plenty of opportunities for me to go back to the spiritual world. I don't envy my guardian angel, or rather, my dear spiritual helper, as I now call him, his job, because he had his hands full making sure I stayed alive so that I could fulfill my life's task today. Fortunately, I didn't even perceive the life-threatening nature of all these situations as such, because it always turned out well for me. My helper did a great job in this regard too. For example, I slept through a bad car accident and only woke up when the car stopped and my father called out, "Get out of here quickly, child." Neither of us was injured, although we had turned around several times and rushed down an embankment. Miraculously, we hadn't rolled over. Another critical event for my life and limb occurred while I was on vacation on a North Sea island. I was maybe 4 years old. My parents, my brother and I were out for a walk when I spotted a great horse in a paddock further away. I ran off and had only one goal, the horse. My parents only noticed that I was no longer near them when it was already too late. Again, the sentence was repeated, "She was just there." The animal's black tail attracted me magically. I stood behind the horse and let the hair slide over my face again and again. To my mother's horror, as she already suspected that the stallion, restless as he was, would try to get rid of me somehow, that's exactly what happened the next moment. The animal gave me a well-aimed kick in the face and I flew a few meters. My parents' hearts almost stopped as they had to watch the event from a distance. Amazingly, I neither lost consciousness nor did I seriously hurt myself. Of course I cried, but more out of shock. At the doctor's office, it became clear how incredibly lucky I had been. The horse's hoof hit me so well that today only a small scar next to my eye reminds me of the incident. My eye, my brain, my neck, all of it remained intact. The eye patch that the doctor stuck on the small laceration I used that same evening to make contact with people who were eating in the same restaurant as us and to start a conversation, which of course worked perfectly. Another time I was with my beloved Grandma Hilda on the way to the gym, where a small sporting event was taking place that we wanted to watch. I knew the way through the changing rooms like the back of my hand, as my grandparents were caretakers at the neighboring school and my mother taught there as a teacher. The gym was built on a slope, so you had to go downstairs from the entrance to the changing rooms and from there to the hall, down more stairs to the gym door. So I took a run and ran down the steps to the changing rooms, through the changing rooms and down the next few steps. By now I had so much momentum that I lost contact with the ground and flew purposefully toward the closed hall door. My grandma had no chance of catching up with me and had to hope for a miracle, which is what happened. Just before I could hit the door, it opened and a southerner came around the corner. He realized the situation in a flash, opened his arms and caught me almost as planned. My grandma got weak in the knees and showered the rescuer with speeches of thanks and then with chocolates. These are just a few examples, but these stories could go on and on. However, they all have one thing in common: in the end, a small to medium-sized miracle always happened, which always ensured that I remained unharmed. I have thought a few times about what should be written on my gravestone when I die. The typical saying of my family, "She was just here," is definitely on the short list. As a child, I didn't particularly notice my talent for being in contact with the spiritual world. For a long time, I assumed that everyone perceived the same things as me, which is why I never felt like an oddball or anything like that. I used my expanded perception to master my everyday life as a child with all its challenges as well as possible. My life was shaped by competitive sports from an early age, which I am very happy about today, as it enabled me to develop discipline and a strong sense of my body, which is very helpful to me today in pursuing my vocation. When I think back to my childhood, I notice a few things that should have made my parents suspicious. For example, as a child, my mother often asked me for advice when she couldn't find certain objects. When I asked her a few years ago whether she wasn't surprised that I always knew where to look for them, she just said, "That was practical, and I just thought you had hidden the things and therefore knew where they were." During the conversation, however, we found out that some objects were stored far too high for me to put them there or see them. When I once told her about a friendly old lady with long, white hair who sat by my bed in the evenings, even though I was actually completely alone in my room, she simply put it down to my vivid imagination. I now know that it was my great-grandmother, who has often appeared to me since then to help me. She died before I was even born, so I didn't know her at the time. I still feel a great connection to her today, because she was and is something like a good spirit for me. I learned from my mother that this woman was a very special person. She had very progressive thinking for the times and was already using homeopathic remedies to treat illnesses. My life has also always been marked by déjà vu. For example, when my family and I went on a holiday trip to the island of Brac, which was still Yugoslavia at the time, we passed through a very old, small fishing village on the way there. Everything there seemed somehow so familiar to me, and I always knew a few moments in advance what we would be driving past next. I thought, oh yes, there's a little shop coming up soon, then a well, then the harbor on the other side, etc. I knew the village and the way to the harbor without ever having been there in this life. I thought that was completely normal at the time and that's why I didn't talk about it. Today I know that I once lived in this village in a previous life and that's why I remembered many details. The fact that my extended perception was pigeonholed as fantasy by my family had one crucial advantage. I could use it in everyday life and thought that was normal, since more or less everyone has imagination. So in my eyes this gift was part of a normal human being's makeup. That was probably also the reason why I was never afraid as a child when I saw my great-grandmother or something else that wasn't actually there. I was completely unbiased about these phenomena. After all, nobody had ever told me that this was scary, strange or negative in any way. I prayed every evening and spoke to God. I knew that he was listening to me and helping me when I really needed him. Getting very helpful answers in the form of thoughts was also part of my everyday life. Today I am sure that I was not communicating directly with God, but with my spiritual helper. Things got a little more difficult in secondary school. In religious education classes, I always had the feeling that something was wrong with what the teacher was trying to teach us. His picture of life, death and heaven did not match my perception at all, and so it often happened that my mother had to speak to the teacher because I had asked why, too often. I basically asked why, about everything that really interested me until I got a satisfactory answer. You can imagine that such a child can be very annoying at times, but my parents took their fate in their stride. On the one hand, they were happy to have such an inquisitive child. On the other hand, they thought that this why phase would also pass at some point. But my parents were wrong about that. Otherwise, I only stood out because of my compassionate, helpful and social nature. I never belonged to a particular group. Even if there were exceptions now and then, I basically liked everyone in this world. Even the children who regularly beat up others and were therefore very unpopular were sometimes part of my closest circle of friends. Somehow I felt sympathy for everyone and that hasn't changed to this day. I feel a basic level of love and understanding for all people and living beings. Of course, there are some who are closer to me than others, but even as a child I didn't know feelings like hate or envy. I was therefore all the more irritated when I was consciously confronted with envy for the first time. I had to understand and accept that there are people who feel envy and resentment, even if that wasn't exactly easy for me. Now you might get the impression that I grew up in a particularly sheltered environment, which could have led to a certain naivety. However, I can't exactly say that I was treated with kid gloves. My brother, who is 5.5 years older than me, didn't really go easy on me either. While he was able to stand out with his strength and size, I had to use cunning and trickery to assert myself against my beloved brother. We argued passionately, but on the other hand we stuck together like glue, depending on what was going on at the time. I now believe that God has endowed me with a certain naivety so that I don't lose my love for people. It is a kind of protection. Because if I didn't believe in the good in people, I wouldn't be able to authentically carry out many aspects of my current work. If I thought miracles were unrealistic, I would no longer have any hope or faith. I have never seen death or dying as something negative or even threatening. I first encountered these topics when animals that lived on my grandparents' farm died at some point. I felt that was natural and would never have thought of arguing with God because of it. The animals that were close to me and died were given a proper burial, and so death was always a part of life for me. Even when my beloved Grandpa Herbert became seriously ill and had to go to the hospital again and again, I wasn't afraid for him. I knew where he would go if he died. I still remember my last visit to him in the hospital very well. He was wearing a white hospital gown and long white thrombosis stockings. He was joking and making fun of me the whole time. He said they were his ballet stockings so he could dance better down the hallway. I wasn't sure if I should believe him, but I did find the idea of my grandpa skipping down the aisle like a prima ballerina very funny. From that day on, I unfortunately didn't have the opportunity to see him again. At some point my mother told me that he was very ill and asked me if I wanted to write him a letter. She would then read it to him as soon as she was with him. Because of arguments between my parents, I was no longer allowed to visit him and my grandma, as they were my mother's parents and my father had forbidden me to have contact with them, so I wrote a letter, every word in a different color and in very large letters, because he could hardly see any more. For me it was a kind of farewell letter, but without sadness. I was simply happy that I could do something nice to cheer him up and that I could tell him how much I loved him. Shortly afterwards he died without us seeing each other again. Unfortunately, I was not allowed to go to the funeral, which I couldn't understand at all at the age of 9. After all, it was the farewell party in honor of my grandfather. But my father saw things differently. He said that children had no place at a funeral. Over the next few years it became increasingly clear that my father saw many things very differently from me. At this time there was already a huge crisis between my parents. They argued often and disrespectfully, and my father left no stone unturned to offend my mother. He lost control of his life and probably tried to control and manipulate everyone else for exactly that reason. That was a real shame, because my father had many positive sides too. Unfortunately, controlling everyone else didn't work out for him. First my mother left, then my brother, and finally I left too. At the age of 13, I told him that I was now going to move in with my mother. I had spoken to God for weeks and asked him for strength to take this step. For various reasons, it took a lot of courage and effort. On the one hand, my father had tried to prevent contact between my mother, my brother, and me. To achieve his goal, he told me all kinds of stories, such as, "Your mother doesn't want to know anything about you." So I was a little unsure whether my mother even wanted me to be with him. On the other hand, I also felt how much my father needed me so that he wouldn't feel like he had completely failed. However, in his personal campaign of revenge against my mother, he forgot something essential: love. No matter what he did or said, it couldn't harm my love for my mother. It was only a matter of time before our close bond would win. I knew that leaving my father alone would destroy him forever. He had already driven away everyone he loved. The illness that would ultimately kill him 3 years later was not long in coming after I moved out. Shortly after he married for the second time, incidentally, in the same church where he had said I do to my mother 20 years earlier, he was diagnosed with cancer. I was now living with my mother and very close to my beloved grandmother Hilda, who had given up the farm in the Eifel after the death of my grandfather Herbert and moved to Solingen, near my mother. A week before his 48th birthday, my father had to go to the doctor unexpectedly because of back pain. But nothing unusual had been found. When I went to visit him on his birthday, I found him lying in bed. He was in a lot of pain and his stomach was as hard as a board. The strange thing was that I wanted to give him a very special present on this birthday of all days. For this reason, I had written him a short story myself a few days before. This story was about an old man in a wheelchair and a little girl. The girl often passed him on her way to the market and they always looked intensely into each other's eyes. However, they never spoke a word to each other. The story ended like this. It was market day again. The girl decided to speak to the old man this time. Full of anticipation, she walked the well-known path to the market square. But this time when she turned the corner, the entrance to the house where the old man had sat in his wheelchair every Saturday was empty. I was firmly convinced that I had the greatest gift in the world, because what child writes their father a story? My father's comment surprised me a little. He said, "That's a strange birthday present. Today I see it the same way as he does." But back then I had written with inspiration and hadn't been aware of the symbolism of the lines. I was much more interested in the idea. In any case, over the course of the following night it quickly became clear what had already been announced in my story. My father was taken to the hospital that same evening, and my mother drove me to him. She let me out of the car with the following words, "No matter what happens and no matter what kind of situation you find yourself in, you stay with him tonight and call me if you want me to come and get you tomorrow." I didn't quite understand the drama. In my opinion, as has often been the case recently, a huge fuss was probably being made about nothing. However, my mother insisted that I should stay there. Unfortunately, she herself did not have permission to come with me. My parents were simply too divided. On the way to the ward, I met a doctor. I spoke to him directly and asked him if he could tell me anything about my father's condition. Although I looked quite young at 16, I was surprisingly able to get very specific information from him straight away. He said that the whole body was now affected by cancer and that it was only a matter of hours or days before my father would die. Strangely, I was not shocked, but simply prepared accordingly when I entered the room. My father was asleep and only realized that I was with him half an hour after I sat down next to him. But he was very happy to see me. At that moment, I realized that I would be staying with him for the night. All of a sudden I felt nothing but love and compassion for him, which surprised me, because our relationship was anything but good at that time, as many things between us were still unresolved. The love that flowed through me was of the same kind as the love that I feel today when I accompany people who are dying or when someone asks me for help. In this situation, I knew intuitively what to do without anyone ever explaining or teaching me. So I sat with him and talked to him, even when he fell into a coma around midnight. I simply tried to give him strength for the path that lay ahead of him, which was already clear to me. I knew that he would find dying difficult because of all the guilt, and so I tried to simply be there for him so that his fear would be lessened. His wife at the time was also with us. But she was struggling with the impending farewell. I, on the other hand, felt surprisingly calm and accompanied him on his final earthly journey. In my mind I was talking to him and noticed that he could even understand me. After he had finally taken his last breath, I left the room and informed my mother and the rest of the family. Then I sat down on a chair in the hospital corridor and only now did I really realize that my father had just died. I thought I would probably have a breakdown or at least burst into tears, but nothing of that happened. On the contrary, I still felt a sense of calm, love and certainty. Only today, many years later, do I know that this was my first time accompanying someone through the dying process. I feel it is a blessing to be able to help the dying and their relatives in these difficult hours. Therefore, contrary to what you might expect, my father's death had a lasting impact on my life. This intense experience did not throw me into deep grief and despair, but I experienced God's love in that moment. I realized for the first time how easy it can sometimes be to help other people. My father met me in a dream for the last time a few weeks after his death to say goodbye to me. I dreamt that I was at my old school. He was standing in a gallery and was watching me from above as I took part in the drama rehearsals. Suddenly I saw him standing there, immediately ran up the stairs and asked him, very surprised, what he was doing there, after all he had died. He answered me that he was allowed to say goodbye to three people in this way and I was one of them. I was very happy about his choice, hugged him and went back down to the others. I waved to him again and then went back to the rehearsal. When I looked up at the gallery shortly afterwards, he had disappeared. After my father's death, a new chapter in my life began. I didn't realize that my ability to perceive and the intensity of my feelings had been activated and strengthened by accompanying my father through his dying days. Doors had opened in me that I didn't even know existed. From that point on, I was confronted with death so often that I simply couldn't avoid the subject. I had to deal with it whether I wanted to or not. The last hours with my father had opened the floodgates of compassion and comfort in me, and now this power wanted to penetrate further into my consciousness and to people. But since I had made up my mind to become a goldsmith, God had to come up with something else so that I could find the way to my true calling. So it came to be that I spent the next 2 years as a regular visitor to funerals for years. One person after another who was close to me died and left this world. It didn't matter whether it was my father's mother, various acquaintances or, last but not least, my dear friend Gerard. He took his own life by diverting exhaust fumes into his car. I had seen him less and less in the weeks before because he finally had a girlfriend, and so I thought he was finally well and happy. So at the age of 18 I found myself in the cemetery again, as had been the case at regular intervals over the past 2 years, to say goodbye to someone and bury them. When my mother and I went home together after the funeral, I slowly got angry and asked her, "What's the point of this? Why am I becoming a regular here? What's going on that I'm constantly confronted with death?" My mother was at a loss and unfortunately didn't know the answer. Instead, a thought flashed through my mind. Why don't you buy yourself a book about life after death? I was surprised by this stupid idea, but I now know that it changed my life in an instant. But since I had no better idea, I actually got myself a book about the afterlife from an English medium. After reading it for a while, I thought, why should I read that? I know what this man writes about the spiritual world and death. It's logical. And another thought came to me. This time in the form of a question, do you think that everyone finds that logical? And suddenly I realized that I was somehow different from others. Because I had never asked myself whether death was as much a part of life for other people as it was for me. I began to reflect on the last few years and realized that my perception was actually very different from others. For example, shortly after my father's death, there was an incident that I had successfully repressed until this moment of insight. I had driven with an acquaintance to visit his friends to see a concert with them. The people and the house where we stopped before the concert were completely unknown to me. But when I entered the house, I suddenly felt uneasy. My chest felt tight and it was difficult to breathe. I noticed a dark cloud in the room and had the feeling that I could actually see it. The cloud connected two people standing in the room. It seemed to me as if they were having a heated argument about breaking up. In fact, there were only friendly, smiling people in the room and nothing indicated the scenario that I had so clearly perceived. I slowly calmed down and thought that I was definitely a case for the nut house. On the way to the concert, after some effort, I asked my acquaintance whether these two were a couple and whether they were thinking about breaking up. It just wouldn't leave me alone. He looked at me, completely stunned, and asked how I knew, because he was the only one they had told. I tried to explain to him that it was just a feeling. Fortunately, he was satisfied with this answer, and I decided to ignore such perceptions in the future, because I didn't want to end up in a closed institution.